Okay.
So I first met Paramabandhu, I think, around 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago, when I joined his study group. Paramabandhu leads a study group for a number of us. So I've sort of been getting to know him over the last couple of years, and I've really enjoyed getting to know him and really admire his understanding of the Dharma, which is why I invited him here to join us this evening. So I think he's a really valuable person to help us explore ethics. So we're studying ethics because it's part of our theme at the moment. We're looking at the six paramitas. Last month we looked at dana, which is the first paramita. So it might be worth saying a little bit about what paramitas are if you haven't come across them before. I was wondering whether or not that was a topic that I wanted to tackle or that I would leave to Paramabandhu, and I think I might leave it to him, actually. So, Paramabandhu, what are paramitas?
Well, yeah, thank you. Okay, paramitas. So, what you've got is, in Buddhism, you've got over the years different, if you like, major schools of Buddhism appearing. So you've got early Buddhism, and then you've got this second main wave of Buddhism called the Mahayana. And within each sort of, if you like, school of Buddhism, you get different formulations of the path. So what the six paramitas are is it's the sort of most important formulation of the Buddhist path within the Mahayana school of Buddhism. So Mahayana, it's Buddhism, with a particular emphasis in Mahayana Buddhism is on the altruistic dimension of Buddhism. So what we're trying to do, if we're an aspiring Mahayana Buddhist, is gaining enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. So there's a strong emphasis on this altruistic side of Buddhism. So the paramitas, the most commonest form is in the six paramitas. They is the path as described in Mahayana, and what it consists of is first of all generosity, then ethics, which is what we're doing tonight, and then the next two are energy and patience, and then the last two are meditation and wisdom. And paramita means perfection. So in a way, what you could see it is when they're fully developed, these six aspects, these six paramitas, when they're perfected, when they become a perfection, that is how a Buddha would behave. So a Buddha spontaneously acts in this way, practices or behaves with these perfections. It's also got a connotation. So my name is Paramabandhu, so it's got this parama and it's got this connotation of parama means something like uttermost or furthermost. So it's got this idea of crossing over to enlightenment. So paramita's got that connotation in it as well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
So ethics is the second paramita, so it's the sort of, I guess, the second perfection that can take us to enlightenment. Well, what I was thinking about when I was sort of preparing some material on ethics is that ethics is a topic that perhaps isn't the one that springs to mind perhaps when you think about coming along to learn meditation or you're thinking about coming along to the LBC. I think for me, definitely what got me interested was meditation. I wasn't sort of inspired by ethics in the beginning anyway. It's something that's only sort of really come to me recently. So I wondered if it might be worth exploring that a little bit. I mean, how have you found your own path developing? Is ethics something that you came to first, or...?
No. No. No, I mean, probably like many people, I first came along to meditate, although I didn't get on terribly well with meditation. I struggled with it for a long time before I really felt I was getting anywhere with it. But I suppose, in a way, what you think about is what we're trying to do in meditation is work on our mind. It's like we're directly working on our mind. First of all, becoming aware of what's going on in our mind, because if we don't know what's going on in our mind, we don't really have any choice. So that's the mindfulness side of it, or that's one aspect of mindfulness, is learning what is actually happening in our mind. And then in the metta bhavana, we're aiming to develop a mind that is, that radiates love, that goes beyond ill will, that transforms ill will into a state of kindness. So we're very much directly working with our mental habits. Now, what you're doing in ethics is really the same thing. It's really Buddhist ethics. It's really about training your mind stream to become more and more what we talk about is skillful. So skillful is a habit of mind that is beneficial, that is based on mind states of clarity, of wisdom, of kindness. So you're developing these mind states, this mind stream, if you like, and putting that into action in your daily life. So the ethics particularly draws our attention to putting, in a way, what you could say we're hopefully learning in meditation into practice in our daily life. And the more we do that in our daily life, then the more that feeds back into our meditation. So you get this reciprocal relationship going on as we develop more clarity and more kindness through meditation. We hopefully then express that in our lives, in our interactions with others. And I was thinking about it in the meditation, when I was doing the metta bhavana. And in a way, one of the things you could think about, we can think about meditation as a sort of turning in. In a sense, what we're doing with ethics, with feelers, is a connecting to other people. It's if you like, a turning out, and particularly, as I mentioned in the Mahayana, there's this emphasis on other regarding, of, in a way, turning out to other people, to connecting with other people in more and more positive, skillful ways, in harmonious ways, in kind ways, in truthful ways, is really what ethics is about.
Mm. Yeah, I think it took quite a long time for me to catch on to that fact, actually, because I was, before I came to the LBC, I was practicing just the mindfulness of breathing for many years, and I didn't really get that far with it. And I think there was a bit of an aha moment when I started practicing the metta bhavana even, and then started paying attention to my ethics as well. And I sort of suddenly realised, oh, of course, ethics affect the way that I'm able to meditate.
Yeah, because if you're doing, if you're sort of doing the metta bhavana and you're all, I love you all, love you all, and then you go out and then you're sort of ill-willing people and shouting at people, guess what? you get a conflict there. it sort of, in a sense, has a very integrating effect to start working on our actions outside of meditation.
Yeah, I mean, it should have really been obvious to me, really, shouldn't it, from the start, but for some reason, I just didn't clock onto that straight away.
I had a little aha moment sort of walking out. I was just walking out. There used to be a bakery on the corner now where the Evolution Shop is. And I was just walking past the bakery, and something set me off, and I suddenly started feeling really angry. And then I just realised, actually, I don't have to do this. And just this sense of, I was just creating this in my mind, and I could just put it down. And it was just like, oh, what a relief. I don't have to create ill will in this way.
Well, I think for me, one of the real barriers to engaging with ethics is the whole load of baggage that I guess I was carrying before I came along to Buddhism. And I think it's, Bhante Sangharakshita, the founder of our movement, has emphasised the importance of really paying attention to this baggage, because it can really affect the way that we're able to engage with our practice. I wonder if you've got any thoughts on that.
I don't know if I can remember. There's a lovely quote that I like by Sangharakshita Bhante. He says something like, that very easily we can think of ethics being about not doing what we want to do, doing what we don't want to do, because we've been told to do something by somebody that we no longer believe in. But anyway,
yeah,
that's quite like that.
Yeah, and there's something else you were saying about whether if you, you know, if you're Christian, and you know, we come from a sort of Christian background, our country was Christian for many, is Christian for many years. If you're Christian, then you've got that load of assumptions to work with, and if you're not Christian, then still you've got a lot of baggage just from being in this culture. You sort of absorb a huge amount even without realising it, and I think a lot of our response to ethics is sort of unconsciously informed without us realising it.
I think, you know, what, in a way, what's important to recognise is ethics in Buddhism is not about, you know, it's not about, as I was saying a moment ago, doing something that we just because we're told to do it. In a way, what we're trying to do with ethics is become more sensitive to the effects of our actions, so that we can gradually see, well, what our actions are, you know, what our actions cause, both to ourselves and to other people, and refining our actions so they have more and more beneficial effect, rather than having a harmful effect either on ourselves or other people. And in a way, when we, you know, when we recognise that we've done something that's harmful, whether it's harmful to ourselves or to other people, it's not about feeling guilty for that, because I think that's one of, I was just thinking about what you're saying about, you know, baggage that we can carry about, you know, with ethics, we can think, oh, you know, it means I have to be good, and then if I'm not good, then I feel really bad about myself, and then, you know, I start beating myself up. And it's really not about that at all. It's really about, just in a way, in a very open-hearted way, seeing the consequences of our behaviour. And I think if we can do that in a very open-hearted way, we will just naturally move towards more skillful behaviour. Will naturally move towards, you know, what is beneficial, because actually it is much more satisfying if we just pay, if we really pay attention to our experience.
I mean, you've used that word skillful a few times. I mean, I find that a really helpful term as opposed to good or bad, because it sort of just highlights, I think, you know, what you were saying about acting skillfully being naturally pleasant and enjoyable. It's not about trying to force ourselves to do something, it's about actually doing something with a bit more care and attention. Do you have anything more to say about, like, skillful and unskillful?
Well, I suppose, you know, I mean, it's interesting the word skillful in a way, because it is about a skill. I mean, I think, you know, one of the key things we're trying to do is, again, come back to this thing of refining our ethical sensibility. So, in other words, really becoming more and more subtly aware of, you know, the consequences of our action. I mean, I've you know, been having a bit of an interesting time recently with the gardens at Vajrasana, which Joe mentioned. So I've got quite a lot of investment in the gardens. I really love the gardens. Anyway, we're having a big building project, and part of the big building project is we've got a landscape architect working with us, you know, which is fantastic. But I suddenly discovered that I'm no longer the, you know, the main, like, garden designer, and there's a bit of me that really doesn't like that. And so it's been quite interesting for me to work with my reactions to that, because I can feel myself very easily go into a variety of responses, like, you know, either right, that's it then, and I'm slamming the door sort of thing. You're thinking, no, that's not a very helpful response, or sort of other sort of forms of sort of righteous indignation, because righteous indignation is so alluring thing, because you've got right on your side. Like, I've looked after these gardens for 10 years, so I should have a say about them. Well, no, not necessarily. And anyway, it's, again, it's just sort of seeing that actually it's unhelpful. You know, or just going, okay, well, I'll just go passive then. And then again, saying, well, no, you need to engage with this. So it's, I find it very interesting just, you know, noticing how I want to sort of go into various unhelpful responses, but, you know, my ethical practice just says, no, you can't do that. And actually, it would, if I do give in to those things, it would just lead to my suffering, as well as the, you know, the vibing of ill will that other people would get as well, probably. But, you know, particularly, it would just hurt me. So, you know, it's been quite interesting just to sort of have this dilemma for me and trying to find a skillful response to it. I mean, I think in a way I'm still working on that. But again, it's this thing of being skillful. It's not always obvious what the most helpful thing to do is. So again, it's sort of like learning a skill that we're in a way continually working on.
Traditionally in Buddhism, there are sort of training principles that help us work on refining those skillful responses. And I guess given that we've talked about ethics a fair bit at the moment, it's probably worth exploring those precepts a little bit so that we can look at what skillful action actually means in practice for Buddhists as they practice. So, I mean, the five precepts are not killing or being kind, not taking the not given and being generous, abstaining from sexual misconduct and practicing stillness, simplicity and contentment, abstaining from untruthful speech and practicing truthful speech, and abstaining from intoxicants and practicing mindfulness. So those are the five precepts that that we try to practice, and particularly within this community we take those on when we decide to become a mitra, a friend of the community. Do you have anything to say about the
precepts? Well, probably a lot one could say about the precepts. How long have we got? But I suppose it emphasises this thing of like there's a negative formulation and a positive formulation. So there's the abstention from. So, you know, we're abstaining from violence, from stealing, from sexual misconduct, and so on. But then there's the positive form. And I think it's important that we've got both in a way, because, otherwise you could take it very sort of like, you know, very simply in terms of, okay, well, I haven't done any killing today, so that's it, I've done the first precept. But, you know, if you put it in the positive formulation of loving kindness, well, it's kind of like there's no end to that. You know, one can always be more kind, one can always develop that further. The same with, you know, you might think again, you know, I haven't stolen anything today, but there's always more opportunity for acting more generously. So I just think it's very valuable in a way. You've got both sides of those emphasised. I suppose the other thing to say about them is they're precepts, and what's meant by precept is they're training guidelines. So they're guidelines for living. They're not rules. Again, it's not that anybody's telling you what to do. It's just like, here's some guidelines, in the sense that actually if you pay attention, if you act generously, you'll notice that it will have a beneficial effect. Whereas when you act stingily, do the opposite, you'll notice that has a contracting effect. It's like the positive precepts have a sort of expansive feel to them. Mm. And again, this thing, it tends to connect us with each other. Whereas then if we act unskillfully, doing the negative versions, then it'll tend to have this constricting effect and a sort of hardening effect on our psyche rather than a sort of opening effect. Mm.
Yeah, that's really been my experience, actually. I remember when I became a mitra and I decided to have a go at the the precepts and think about them a bit more fully. I mean, my ethical life was, well, there was lots to work with anyway. And I decided, particularly around intoxication, just to take an experiment, really, and see what it was like to not to be intoxicated and to be more mindful, and see how that sort of worked out. So I sort of gave it a shot, and that's really been my experience, is that it's been an opening, and I feel like I haven't lost anything. So I think maybe I kind of, my assumptions about ethics was that I was telling myself not to do something that I enjoyed, and there was a sort of a feeling of denying myself of something, whereas actually in the practice of it I was gaining something, and it felt like a release rather than being denied something. Right, well, let's leave it there. We could go on. Thank you, Pam Bandy. That was really helpful. So there's going to be an opportunity for any questions if you've got any, but first let's split up into groups of three or four so that we can just have a chance to explore some of these issues. Well, I've got a question for you. Maybe that's just something to start you off, really, and then see how your discussion goes. So maybe you could think about what your own associations with ethics are, what your ethics. That would be quite difficult. I could take it in a really dangerous direction. Thank you, David. Right, so find some friendly people around you and have a discussion for about 15 minutes. 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'll come back at the end.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you. Do you want me to get stuck in, or should we take a break?
No, I'll have to get stuck in.
No, I'm not doing it. I'll be right. Are you using the I don't know. Aspen, actually.
Thank you.
Share any reflections, or if you have any questions, or
some of us were saying, well, I was certainly some of us were talking about relating to this idea of rules. That when they become rules, they become Nico, also called Nico. Was talking about we have a sort of rebellious side. So once things seem like they're a rule that's been imposed, there's then a reaction to want to sort of kick against that. Mm. I still can't quite get over that thing of that it feels like saying thou should not. So you were mentioning the Christian thing, I don't know. So then it just doesn't work when it's becoming like that. It's just not. It's not in the right spirit of it. But I can never quite shift it. Shift that perspective. That's what really it is.
you just have to keep coming back to your experience, or you just have to keep looking, you know, and find out for yourself. You know, as the Buddha said, don't take it because I say so. You have to check it out in your own experience. Yes, you can get, of course you want to pay attention as well to people who've got more experience, because you'd be, in a way, foolish not to, but at the end of the day, you have to find out for yourself. And I suppose that is the thing. So I think the trick, in a way, is learning to be scrupulously honest with yourself. Because I think it's so easy to paper over the unsatisfactory aspects of our unskillful behaviour. So, for example, like craving, you know, craving's unskillful, but because we easily confuse it with the, you know, the gratification of the object, we can think of it as being a pleasurable thing, and somebody saying it's unskillful, saying, hey, you're stopping me from having pleasure, I would have run out of fun. But really, if you really pay attention to the quality of craving in the body, and it's got this kind of tense feeling, it's actually quite painful, but it does require real scrupulous honesty to see that and feel that. So again, that's what you need to come back to.
Just lastly, I think it's very difficult with some things that are, we were talking a little bit about vegetarianism, and some things that you might consciously be aware of as you know, you might feel generally that meat trade is terrible and whatnot, but it hasn't sort of somehow penetrated into your heart, and so you're still acting in that same way, and that's when I think that sort of conflict comes in, at least for me, of part of me thinks that I shouldn't be doing it, because there's a thought that it is the bad thing to be doing, but that's still just on a, yeah, all I can say is on a conscious level, you know, I've read stuff about it and fine, it's affected my mind, but, and yet I'm still doing it. And so that creates this weird thing of, I'm doing it, part of me thinks I shouldn't be doing it, but yeah, I don't mean, it's just a comment on that.
Sure. But I mean, you know, we're not Buddhists, so of course we're not acting perfectly skillfully all the time, you know, and there's a tension there.
So we had a really interesting discussion, and one thing that came out is that actually in our culture it's really confusing. There's this, like, everyone's claiming to have either more ethics or you know, where do you get your ethics from, basically? Like, what, who's to say my ethics is any better than your ethics, or who's to say that any ethics is just merely a cultural construction? So why are Buddhist ethics any better than any other cultural or personal ethics? What makes them any better, I guess, that's the question, if they are better?
Well, I mean, of course one doesn't know what one's comparing to, so it would be difficult to say, as it were. I suppose the main thing to say is that you know, what the Buddha is saying is that ethics is based upon how things are, the nature of reality. So specifically based on what's referred to as the law of karma. So basically karma is about the consequences of willed actions. And as I was saying to Nico, you know, the only way to do that is to really to find out, is to find out from practicing it, seeing what happens. So, you know, don't take it on say so because I'm saying it or because the Buddha's saying it. You know, you've got to find out for yourself whether it's a way of life that you want to practice. And then, in a sense, sort of, you know, it doesn't really matter whether. You know, the question about is this best, or, you know, is that best, doesn't matter. It's like, you know, finding out for myself that, you know, this makes sense, this leads to a way of life that is creates less damage, less harm from my own experience. I don't need to do a whole comparative religion thing, as it were. Yeah.
And I was wondering, do we all fundamentally have the same ethics? Culture put aside, as human beings, basically, is it like something that we all have, like that? Especially as it's something kind of empirical.
Yeah.
We all have the same results in experimenting it, culture put aside.
Well, what Buddhism distinguishes is between natural morality and conventional morality. So natural morality are these, you know, what I was talking about in the way natural law, that natural, the effect of certain actions. And what Buddhism would say is that is shared universally across all humanity. It's in the structure of consciousness. But then there are certain ways that we go about organising our behaviours just first so that we can get on socially, which is, a lot of that is conventional. Now there may well be, you know, an overlap between natural morality and conventional morality, there often is, but sometimes there won't be. So for example, you know, whether, you know, you get married or don't get married and how you do that is largely a matter of conventional morality, and it's just not something that sort of needs to be, as it were, organised in society, and that will be, you know, culturally bound. But the effects of one's actions is more universal.
Thomas, I think I've been particularly struggling with, and I think I'm not the only one. What if something that I'm doing ends up hurting somebody, but I do not believe that me doing that action is the cause. So for example, I would say there's a woman that really wants me and I don't want her. By me rejecting her, I end up hurting her. How do you deal with that? Like, do I have
any... I bet it happens all the time. Well, of course, you know, we can't.
That's an example.
Yeah, yeah. That's just no. Yeah, just no. you know, the thing is, our actions, in some ways, of course, will have multiple consequences. You know, life is, you know, from another point of view, life is quite complex, and one can't even necessarily predict all the consequences. You know, it might turn out that actually she's secretly relieved. of course you can anticipate as far as possible people's likely responses and try and, you know, respond in a helpful way. But the essential thing you can only really do is come from your own mental state. So you can really have an intention of kindness. So, you know, you could say to somebody in that situation something like, you know, actually I'm you know, really sorry, but, you know, I don't feel that way, so, you know, that's how it is. Or you could go, oh, you must be joking. You could have a quite an unskillful or a skillful response. So both could be hurtful, because you're, as it were, rejecting the person. But, you know, depending on your intention, you know, can make quite a difference. But yes, of course, it's not possible to predict all consequences. And, you know, even if you act in a way that's, you know, scrupulously skillful, you can't predict necessarily other people's responses in all sorts of ways. You know, and that, in a way, that's, you know, beyond a reasonable amount of care, that is other people's responsibility, how they respond.
Can I also just add that? I think it's a really important point that you made, which is about, do you act in someone else's interest over your own, which is what I think you're getting at. And I think really, just to add to what you're saying, it's about, it's that kind of cliche of being cruel to be kind, because ultimately, if you're not going to be able to be, in that example, the best person for that person, then ultimately the act of rejecting that woman in that example is actually an act of kindness. Because you accepted in yourself that there's something in you that's not going to be... There are plenty of people, for example, who may, out of laziness or cowardliness, not do the honest thing and actually do more damage. So I think that's... It can also, you know, it can often be an act of kindness. But with things like murder and, you know, there were some fundamental... I think what's interesting about this whole discussion is, are there fundamental rights and wrongs, and where we got to in our discussion, which was amusing at times, and you know, we were looking at the idea of sex and sort of, is there a scale of, and you touched on it, these are guidelines, not rules. It was okay, well, what, you know, how do you know when you're, when it's good sex or bad sex? At what point you sort of say, okay, this is good sex, you know, I'm in a good relationship, this makes me, I can feel this is good, and at what point do you say, this doesn't feel quite right? And then we got onto the point at the end about respect for someone else, and it's right when you've got that mutual respect. And we concluded with, ethics are about, ultimately, another cliche, you know, doing to others what you would have done to yourself. Mm. So there may not be a right rule book, but if you go about your life treating others as you would want to be treated, then that's probably the most universal kind of way to think, I think, we think.
I mean, it's interesting because you were saying about, you know, was it, you know, self versus other, but I think the point that you, in a way, you drew out is that by, if you'd just gone along in the example there, you know, actually it's not doing them any favour, you know. So it's not just about you actually in that situation, you know. In it, because as you said, if you're not, you know, if you're passively going along in the relationship, it's not, in the long term, it's not going to be, you know, helpful.
And it breaks the speech priest as well.
Yeah.
We've probably got time just for one more point. We've had your hand up for a while.
Thanks. Somebody over there mentioned, is how do we know if any ethical path is better than the other, and if, in that sense, Buddhism is the right one. And when I went back to my country for holidays, I have many Christian friends there, good Christians, some of the thou shalt not kill types, but really honest and very good people. And what we came down again and again was that ultimately all pure ethics, obviously there is the ethic of, I don't know, maybe extremes, like that could be fascist ethics, for instance, and obviously that is not a good ethic and that can be seen that it's wrong, you know, or unskillful. But if somebody else is on a path, it only becomes a question of personal taste. So for instance, we notice that highly progressed Buddhists and highly progressed Christians all come down to the very, very similar point, and they are all just generations of love towards everyone and unselfishness. And we realize that the end is the same, only the path is different, but we each feel that our path is the most straightforward. So we would think Buddhism is the one, they would think Christianity is the one, and it really is just our own taste, what is the most convenient for us in that sense to reach that goal. I hope that's constructive. I'm just trying to say something smart.
I mean, I think you can certainly see there's a lot of overlap, and you know, obviously, you know, without sort of rowing into the waters of Christianity, as it were, which is after all a very, you know, broad ranging set of beliefs. I suppose the central difference is that, you know, as we were saying about Buddhist ethics, it's about just how things are, rather than, you know, karma's not mediated by another being, as it were, which is, you know, a sort of major difference between Christianity and Buddhism.
All right, well, let's leave it there. It's always a very neat conclusion. So I just would like to really thank Pamela Bandu for coming to join us this evening. It's been a pleasure to have you. So thank you very much.